Sometimes the conditioned soul is absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments and getting a supply of water and riches to maintain his body. Absorbed in acquiring a variety of necessities, he forgets everything and perpetually runs around the forest of material existence. Purport. As originally mentioned, a poor man belonging to the mercantile community goes to the forest to get some cheap goods to bring back to the city to sell at a profit. He is so absorbed in the thought of maintaining body and soul together that he forgets his original relationship with Krishna and seeks only the bodily comforts. Thus, material activities are the conditioned soul's only engagement. Not knowing the aim of life, the materialist perpetually wanders in material existence, struggling to get the necessities of life. Not understanding the aim of life, even though he acquires sufficient necessities, he manufactures artificial necessities and thus becomes more and more entangled. He creates a mental situation whereby he needs greater and greater comforts. The materialist does not know the secret of nature's ways, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3:27. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. Due to lusty desire, the living entity creates a certain mental situation whereby he wants to enjoy this material world. He thus becomes entangled, enters different bodies, and suffers in them. The living entity, as he moves in the material world, then the tendency very much there is to forget Krishna. Because when we're in a forest, we're looking for things. Then one becomes very absorbed in these things. And then when one gets these things, one's worried about taking care of these things. So here is, even though the living entity gets these comforts, still he manufactures in his mind reason for getting more comforts. And then, even though he gets those, then he goes to the next step, he manufactures a need for comforts that he doesn't actually need. First he wants to increase what he has to beyond what he needs, and then he dreams up need for artificial things that actually are not required at all. So in this way he becomes very much entangled. So now here, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining this is how the material nature works. So that's important to understand that this is how it works. It's not that, oh, this works for some people, but this is the way material nature works. Pointed out here, the kartaham iti manyate, prakrite kriyamanani, the prakriti is doing the work. The modes of nature are there, she is doing. So if we put ourselves under her care, if we put ourselves under her direction, then she uses us like an instrument. This is going on, whether we know it or not, but this is the way it happens. Right? If you put some food in front of a very hungry man, then you can basically guarantee he's going to eat it. He thinks, yes, I am hungry, so I am eating. But what he doesn't understand is because he's being forced by the material nature. Because he can't not do it. Right? People think they are free. They will say devotees are not free, very restricted. But we are free. We can smoke, we can drink, we can do what we like. But the devotee has the choice to do it or not do it. He's chosen to not do. So that's freedom, when you have a choice and you follow your choice. But the man who is saying, no, we're our freedom, we can smoke. Okay, let's see you not smoke for the next 2 weeks. They cannot do it. Absolutely could not do it. So where's the freedom? There is no freedom. They think they're free. They're free because they're doing nothing. They're just going along, like in a roller coaster ride. You can say, yes, I'm free. See, I don't have to drive. I don't have to push the pedals. But the car goes the way it's going to go. It has nothing to do with us. We may want to get off. We may want to turn left or right. But it's going to go through all those loops and make you sick. You may want so many things, but it's going to go the way it's going to go. So we think we're free, but we're being used as an instrument. So this is the point, is that one can either be an instrument for Maya or an instrument for Krishna. That is the position of the living entity. He's an instrument. That's all. I mean, what do you expect out of 1/10,000th the tip of a hair? You know? It's not going to do a whole heck of a lot. Especially when you look at material nature is 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation. Right? And then spiritual nature is the other 3/4. And then you put those two on either side and you put 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in the middle. So it's either going to be influenced by one or the other. So if we understand this, means if we're honest, then we see that this is how material nature works. So we have to be very vigilant to keep ourselves under Krishna's care, Krishna's control. Then we'll be an instrument for him. Otherwise, there's not other alternatives. It's not like there's a big list of alternatives of who you can be an instrument for or you can be a controller. No, we're instrument for Maya, we're instrument for Krishna. These are the two choices. You know, very straightforward, very simple. So here we see that the nature is you get something, but then you always want more. Right? Have you ever seen a businessman decide, well, we need, $100,000, and when he gets it, then he stops? No, they keep going until they lose everything. It's just the way it goes. They're forced by the material nature. So even though they have sufficient, then they must get more. We have one car, okay, we need 2 cars. We have a 2-bedroom house, no, we need 4 bedrooms. Right? So it just keeps increasing. Then we start, so then even that, okay, that is also hard to work for, but that is not as hard as the next trick of Maya. First one is we have to work hard for what we think we need. Then we have to work hard for what the mind conceives of more that we need. But then comes the dirtiest trick, having to work for things we absolutely don't need. We have a car, no, we must have a very prestigious car. You know? Oh, we're living happily in this part of town. No, we have to live in this part, another part of town which is more prestigious. Or we need all kinds of paraphernalia that we don't actually require. We need televisions. We need all kinds of different electronic gadgets. You know, we need cigarettes. We need alcohol. We need drugs. We don't need any of that. Life goes on very easily without it. Right? Somehow or another, the cats and dogs and the cows and all that, somehow or another they're surviving, without all these things. Amazingly enough, but true. But, the cow has survived living without watching Saturday Night at the Movies. Somehow or another, how, we don't know. We will have to do research work to understand how it is that the cow survived without watching the television. But so then, for that, we must work very, very hard. Because generally we see things that we need have some substance. And the price we pay is pretty close to the price, what it takes. You have a house, it has certain amount of materials, it costs something, and there's some labor, and then some natural profit, and then that's it. But now if you go for some prestigious place, it doesn't cost any more to build. But just because people think this piece of land is more important than that piece of land, then you pay 10 times the price. Or something like, let's say, you take all these perfumes. This is a really good one. the perfume itself maybe costs, those fancy ones that cost $100, $150, they probably cost $5 for the perfume, probably another $10, $15 for the bottle, right? But if they just sold it for $20, who would buy it? So you sell it for $150, then everybody thinks, ah, very special, very unique. Right? How you say? I don't know about here, but I know in India, petrol, it costs them about 1.80 rupee to produce a liter of petrol, but they sell it for 20 liters, 20 rupees. Like that. Just so these things that you don't require actually cost more than their actual value. Well, things that we acquire are actually a little closer to their value. Like that. So it's a very dirty trick by Maya. But she runs everybody through it. If you step onto the path of sense gratification, this is her methodology. This is how she will work. It's not she may work like that, or because we're devotees, she won't work like that. She will work like that. It doesn't matter who you are. If you are Brahma, down to the Indugopa germ, she will work like that. She forces one down this path. So the devotee has to be very careful to understand this and understand that we are servants of Krishna, so we must serve Krishna. What we require must be in relation to Krishna's service, and how much we need, we are satisfied with that. We see in the culture, the Brahmins, they're very satisfied. When they have enough to live, things are going on, they're satisfied. Because then that means then they can spend the balanced time in Krishna consciousness. When we see this poor this businessman, then he gets something, but then he wants more. He has sufficient to live. Right? Already the businessman weighs 200 kilos, and but he can still only eat 5 chapatis, right? 4 chapatis. So how much does that cost? No, but he has to be making millions of dollars every day. Like that. But he doesn't require it. Right? So we have to understand that the aim, what is the aim of life, and keep our mind fixed on that. That the aim of life is what we want. And then we have to work towards that only. We should not work towards beyond what we need in the material world. We always have to see that that is the important thing. Just like you want to get somewhere, so then you'll buy a ticket, you'll do some other things, and you get on the plane, you go. So buying tickets and getting to the airport is just so you can get on the airplane, so you can get to where you want to go. It's not that to go to the airport we must, you know, hire a stretch limousine like this, and we must take, you know, so many fancy things with us. No, the purpose is getting to where we want to go. So however we can do that very simply, easily, without much endeavor, that is what we want. So everyone has to be very careful of this. Otherwise, Maya will trick us. It doesn't matter how senior we are, how long we've been in the movement, what our position is, how intelligent we think we are. Maya has the same trick for everybody. You know, she's a very, you know, simple person. You know, has a basic program for everybody, like that. You know, not complicated. But as we can understand, we're more simple because we all fall for it. So we have to keep this in mind, that this is a danger that is there. The question is, what happens in the material world? How does it work? This is the question. So here is the answer. This is how it works. Right? It's not that if we have, you know, a fire, and if we're devotees, we don't get burnt by this fire. And if you're a non-devotee, then you'll get burnt. No, fire is fire. It works in a particular way. You have to deal with it in a proper way. It doesn't matter if we're a devotee or not a devotee. It works in that way. So here it's being pointed out that this is how the material nature functions. So we have to see it. We have to understand that when we endeavor for material necessities, we must see only what we actually need. Because even that first stage, we have to be careful. It says he creates mental situation whereby he needs greater and greater comforts. It's a mental situation. One actually looks at how many of one's possessions one actually uses on a regular basis. Then one can understand how much one has over-collected. Just as an exercise, you just look at all the things you have and you see how many things you actually use. How many things are there just because you think you might need it? Then how many things are there that maybe once in a year, twice in a year, you might use? But you wouldn't have to keep them. You could get them from somewhere else or borrow it or something. You use it so less. Right? And then there's so many things we need for decoration or this or that or whatever it is. But we find that we don't need nearly as much as we've collected. And even though we can identify that we've collected more than we need, we will see that we still have desires to collect more. We already have plans how to collect more. So it is a very simple thing. So it is pointed out here. So those who do not have that tendency, when we become akinchana gochara, we don't require anything in the material world. What we need, what comes easily, that is useful in our service, that we keep or that we accept. And more than that, then we disregard. Otherwise, one becomes entangled. You have so many things you have to maintain. So we have to be very careful. Any questions on this? Yes.
If we're under the control of the divine energy as a devotee, then Krishna gives special protection from mayas. We've learned like that.
Mm.
So then if we become under the control of the material nature, then obviously we'll get burned. But isn't the case of a devotee who will get burned even more? If he already knows.
Can.
As a corrective means.
That many times is there, but the point is a devotee becomes more sensitive because he actually knows. See, if one is in ignorance, there's a tendency to fight. But if one is in knowledge, then it's much more painful. You know? Like that. So it's a matter of if one is so conditioned by the material nature, then sometimes you don't notice so much because it's just the way it always is. But then if you're in a situation where it's not there, then when it comes it can be more difficult, more painful. It also depends upon whether you're dealing within sinful activities or aparad. See, aparad will always give a stronger reaction than just sinful or material activities. You know? Because one is weakness, and the other is actual lack of culture. So that lack of culture, that is treated more harshly than weakness of the senses.
The example that came to mind was Prabhupada saying that in India people are suffering so much because they haven't taken up this message of Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah. Because there they suffer so much, it'll be perceived as suffering so much. You know, I mean, it is a pretty crazy place. But over here, it appears that things aren't so bad. But actually, the suffering over here is even greater. But it depends upon the individual. Those in India who are following a little more closely then is less, and those who are not following at all, it's greater. But it is natural. It's just like the small child, if it does something improper, then the reaction is going to be less than an older child who knows better. That's also very natural. So in this way, you might also find that in India the reactions are stronger. But one should be careful not to push the line. You know, walk up to the edge, see how close you can get. You know, how you can, the best of both worlds, you know, whatever it is, you know, reading, how you say, chanting your rounds, you know, while you're, you know, sunning yourself down on the beach, you know, like that. You know, the best of both worlds. We have Hare Krishna and we have the beach and all the nice girls walking around with nothing on. So, you know, we have the best of everything. So we have to be very careful that we avoid this kind of endeavor. Otherwise, Krishna can give some pretty strong lessons. But we have to understand that if we don't accept these, then Maya has even stronger lessons. Anything else? So here's pointing out that this businessman is very absorbed in thoughts of maintaining the body and soul together. So he forgets his original relationship with Krishna and seeks only bodily comforts. So we have to be very, very careful of this, especially if one is moving from a temple situation into a situation outside the temple. We will generally find those who are living outside the temple, they come in contact with the temple. Whatever free time, spare time they have, they're engaged in the temple. But then we'll find, because they see that they've been suffering so much, that this is the greatest relief, the association of devotees, the facility to perform service. So they're very enthusiastic. Sometimes we see someone who's been living in a temple situation, when they move out of the temple situation, it depends upon what is the motive. The motive is simply that is a better situation for oneself. One is more rightly situated, then that's okay. But if there's, especially if there's the interest of independence, then one finds one moves into that situation, then one gets caught up just like this mercantile man. Becomes so absorbed in maintaining, one has no time. You'll see that person rarely comes to the temple. Has no time, shows up maybe on Sunday, maybe not even that, only a Janmashtami or, you know, Radhashtami. Because then one becomes so absorbed in these things. Though in one's mind one's thinking, I'm a devotee, but one doesn't understand how Maya has tricked us. So one has to be very, very careful of these tricks. I mean, they're going on. It's not that this is just some theory. They're going on practically today. You can go around and you can see those who are living outside, even those who are living inside, whatever it is. These things are plaguing them many times greatly. Some more, some less, some not at all. Depends upon their consciousness. But it's not that this is not going on. So we have to be very, very careful about Maya and look at our situation very objectively, try to understand, you know, what to do and what not to do. Questions on this? It's not so much as speeding up, it means that the reactions are already there, they're already destined. means you do something like if you plant, you know, a tomato seed, you're going to get a tomato plant. You won't get an eggplant, you know, plant or something, or a kumquat or something. You'll get tomatoes. So in the same way as we've performed activities, those reactions will come. They're there. It's not that they won't come. But by chanting Hare Krishna, it minimizes or reduces very greatly the reactions that we'll get. You know, instead of getting 500 tomatoes off of the plant, we may get just one. You know? So like that, Krishna reduces it very much. So the fruits are greatly reduced. So to that degree that we are chanting purely, to that degree they are also removed. Like that. In the beginning it'll be slowly they're going. And as our chanting becomes more pure, then it goes much, much quicker. Yes, one can judge it. Prabhupada says by jnana and by rag. By what how much knowledge that we are gaining and how much detachment is there. These two things we can judge our advancement. You know? And also whether we like chanting. If we like chanting, we like to give the time, we like to pay attention. So as these things come, as our interest in and taste for an attachment for doing spiritual activities increases, and our detachment from material activities decreases, then we can see practically that it's working, the process is working, it's going on. Yeah, no, the benefits are there. Especially if one is avoiding offenses, the benefits are there. It's not that the benefits aren't there. Just sometimes, because we become conditioned to the mode of goodness, sometimes we don't see them so much. Someone in the mode of goodness, it takes very little to disturb them. Someone in the mode of ignorance, it has to be very, very heavy to disturb them. Like that. So as we become purified, it appears that, you know, so much suffering is still going on, but actually what's going on is very, very little. But it's just that little bit bothers us. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned that the illusory energy of Krishna or Maya, when it works, it's independent of that individual soul. It's a separate force because the person is just the instrument. So if someone acts nastily to me, after some time I'll be able to see that activity is not the activity of the soul, it's something else. So one can forgive. Is that?
Yes. See, one understands if someone behaves badly with you, you know, this is they're being an instrument either for Krishna or Maya. It's not the person that's doing it. That we deserved to have somebody deal with us in that way. So either Krishna or Maya has arranged that, you know.
So then one doesn't have any personal grudge against
the soul. No, that's why that's what. What is it? Ajatashatru? Is that the word? That's the meaning of that. That one who has no enemies is Ajatashatru. Means one for whom an enemy has not been born. That doesn't mean that there's not people who are inimical towards you, but in your mind, no one is an enemy. It's like Yudhishthir did not see Duryodhana as an enemy, but Duryodhana saw Yudhishthir as an enemy. So he would act with him very badly. But one doesn't see, because one understands that one's only going to get what one deserves. It's not going to be something else. You know, the demigods are very efficient, so they don't make mistakes. You know, it's just what you deserve. It's the example is given that if you have a big, huge herd of cows, and then if you let a calf out, the calf doesn't have to look around and wander around looking for its mother. It just runs into the crowd and immediately finds its mother. Even though it's a huge crowd, they can just immediately go on straight to where their mother is. So like that, the karma comes. There's unlimited living entities out there and so much karma, what is due to you immediately comes and finds you. It doesn't need, you know, it's not that you have some guy coming up with a little, you know, sheet of paper and his overalls on and knocks on your door and asks, is this Mr. like this? And, you know, in your last life, did you do this and all that? Okay, so then he goes back to the van and gets out a box and delivers it to you. So when you open it up, then you get your reaction. It's not exactly like that. You know, it comes like that. So then this is a very, very important aspect in advancing in devotional service, that you see what is happening as Krishna's arrangement. He may make the arrangement personally, he may make it through the material energy. But in any case, we're only getting what we deserve. And when we understand that, then from that moment, then we start to become happy. And our advancement starts to become dynamic. But as long as we think that things are unjust, this person did this to me, this is improper. Because then justice means he did something to me, I do something back. He did something, he gets a reaction. So that is the mentality of someone who wants to stay in the material world. The great desire for justice is the cause for staying in the material world. Like that. So this feeling of justice, or that's the right thing, or they deserve that, and all that, this is the exact consciousness of someone who is materially contaminated, even though they're devotees. But this is a symptom of not so much advancement. It's when there's the great desire for justice. Because justice is the platform of pranamoy. Like that. May be wrong, but the whole point is we deserve what we deserve. Right? So then Krishna arranges that we deserve something and someone else has a mentality to perform those things. They are in that, so they become controlled by the modes of nature. And we, because we're controlled by the modes of nature, then we get that reaction. So Krishna does many, many things at once. So one may have so many reasons why one feels one doesn't deserve it. And I was right in the situation. So maybe on that particular thing we were right. Let's say there's an argument over how to do something. So maybe technically we were right on how you do things in this situation. This may have been the better and more efficient way. And the other person was wrong, and it turned into a big argument. But Krishna is not worried about how expertly you're doing your service. I've never seen it said that Krishna is accepting, you know, very expert, well-done service, and not so well-done, he's not accepting. No, he's accepting that which is done with devotion. So then this means that maybe we were right on that platform, but when it comes to our attitude, which is what Krishna is interested in, Krishna is interested in devotion, which is our attitude. So if our attitude is bad, even though materially we're right, when it comes to devotional service, we're 100% wrong. Right? So, therefore, we find ourselves in a situation in which our bad attitude is being disturbed. And it brings it out. We think we're very advanced, and then Krishna shows, well, if you're so advanced, then why this is happening? So then, if we get into the thing, no, the other person's wrong, we want justice, that means we're fools. We completely miss the point that Krishna's trying to teach us. That we have an attitude problem. But because of our pride, because of our ego, we think, no, I was right in this material situation. This other person's wrong. Why he's yelling at me? So this is cause for staying in the material world for a long time. And then we didn't learn by that pressure. So, and if others tell us, hey, you know, your attitude's not good. What do you mean my attitude's not good? Why are they telling me like that? You know, I was right. I've been doing this for so long. I've been, you know, this, that. You know, he's just new. Who does he think he is? Just because he's in the position, you know, I can do that too. But this is reality. This is going on today. This is going on in our lives. So Krishna is giving the pressure. Someone tells nicely, we won't listen. He gives that little pressure, we don't listen. So then what do you have to do? Krishna has to increase the pressure. And then he increases more and more and more, and then we become bitter, nasty, and we go away. Because we don't deserve it. Come on, 20 years Sankirtan, and they treat me like this? Who do they think they are? You know, I'm Prabhupada's disciple. They're just new guys around here. Who do they think they are? This is going on today. Whatever the position. So Krishna is trying to tell us, but we don't want to listen. So what can you do? So Krishna has to leave it to Maya to just beat us and kick us around till one day again we surrender. Maya kicked us around so much for so many unlimited lifetimes, we finally surrendered after unlimited billions of lifetimes. But now we become proud of a little bit of service that we've done, and again we're the controllers and the enjoyers. And so then Krishna again has to kick us around. Because we're foolish. We don't learn by the simple processes of just right here. Bhagavatam is telling us. Don't you see, my dear living entity, that you are controlled by these things? Understand it. Give them up. But no. What do you mean? I'm not like that. You know? What do you mean? You don't understand. You sannyasis and all that don't understand the realities of dealing with, you know, life, real life. You know, you have to feed your family, you're this, you're that. You don't understand. Somehow or another, then that means Sukadeva Goswami doesn't understand. Parikshit Maharaj, who's emperor of the world, so I think he's taken on a little bit more burden than any of us here. Any of us that's on the planet today. The burden of maintaining a whole kingdom, which meant the whole world. Everybody was fed, everybody was happy. And he's listening to this and not telling Sukadeva, what do you know? You're just a naked guy walking around. What do you know about these things? He's not saying. He's accepting. He's going, yes. I'm doing all these things. I'm managing all these things. But then I'm thinking, yes, I am doing all this. But the point is Maya's doing it or Krishna's doing it? We're not doing anything. We have the desire. Then it gets carried out. You know, just like the little child, he thinks, oh, I want this. So then the parent goes out, he gets the money, he buys the thing, brings it back, gets to the kid. So the kid thinks, yes, see, I want it, I got. You know, I'm running things. He doesn't understand. If the parents didn't go out and buy it, he'd have nothing. So like that, we have to be very, very careful. Maya is very clever, and these are the subtle ways she tricks us. You need something. Then you dream up what you think you need. Then you get that. Then you want more. Then you start, you have that because material things don't satisfy. Then you start dreaming of things you actually don't need. I gotta have. You know, the secretary who's doing a little, you know, typing a little correspondence decides she needs a, you know, an A-frame, you know, mainframe computer, you know, that takes up half the temple to. You know, stuff like that. We dream up things we don't need. Something simple will take care, but we need more. So we have to work. So Maya is very clever, and she doesn't spare anybody. She's not sparing Brahma, who's the most pious, most intelligent living entity in the universe. She doesn't spare him. He falls a little from the path, she takes him right out. But because of his purity, his piety, then as soon as the Kumaras come to him and say, my dear father, this path you're taking is not so good, it's not recommended, then he immediately stops and goes, yes, you're right, and changes and gives it up. Because of purity. So it said purity is the force. Without purity, one cannot move forward. Otherwise it would say a false ego is the force. That's what's going on in the material world. But that's not what drives this preaching mission. It's purity. So if we are pure, we are open, people will tell us. Nobody minds telling somebody and giving advice. But no one wants to give advice to someone who's very proud. No one wants to give. Who wants to give? So much trouble. You got to take a long time. You got to be so careful how you say it, this, that, getting in there. And then when you finally say it, they may take it, they may not. You may have been so subtle they miss it, think it was meant for someone else. You know, so many times they're saying, yeah, you got to do this, got to do that, surrender. And the person's thinking, yeah, everybody here should surrender. They're all nonsense. They never think it's for themselves. Or it may have made a direct hit, and then they become very offended. What do you mean? Who are you to tell me? Or even, okay, you can tell me, but maybe it's all right. I can agree. Yes, I should forgive. I should not look like this. Yeah, I mean, I understand the theory, but not for these people. You know, maybe if they were, you know, more advanced, something. If they behaved like this, then yes, I could forgive them. But they're behaving like that. How I can forgive them? Right. So even though we understand, but whether it'll be taken, so who wants to take that trouble to tell someone like this? Who wants to take the trouble? Even all symptoms are going on around him, everything's falling apart, but somehow or another, no, just everybody's in Maya. It's everybody else's in Maya. So it's a very easy process, very simple, very straightforward. We just have to take it and do it. You know, we may not be so expert, we'll have difficulties. That's understood. Just like the small child, the parents don't sit there and criticize the first time the child stands up and falls on his face and go, ah, look at that, you see that, stupid kid. No, they're very happy. Oh, he tried to take the first step. Right? So in the same way, it's when we try, it's not that if we fail, Krishna sits there and, you know, sniggers at us. No, he's very happy. Ah, my devotee is trying. Though he made a mistake, but Krishna gives that support. Then slowly, slowly become more and more expert. But we have to understand that that expertise is coming by Krishna's grace. So if we think, I'm the doer. See, the problem is we're in Maya, we're thinking I'm the doer. Then finally we understand Maya's beating us, this, that. No matter what I plan in that, I'm not the doer. Then we surrender to Krishna. But then when things start to go nicely there, if again we think, yes, I am the doer, then again we'll have trouble. So the principles, it's very simple, but we just have to see them and, you know, try our best. You know, it's not expected that today we're just going to be perfect at it. But we hear it, we contemplate, we try to see how to apply it in our life. Then we see that it starts to work, it happens. Like that. So by taking shelter of Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then we see it all starts to happen very nicely. Any questions on this? Yes.
Now I'm saying that Krishna is all so simple when we become devotees. When we become devotees, we taught that Krishna absorbs our sinful reaction. But does he also alleviate our pious reaction as well?
That is a very important point. It's not so much that he absorbs. They just go. Krishna doesn't have to take anything. You know, it's all shadow anyway, so it's not any substance. But this is a very important point. Devotees generally are thinking about getting rid of sinful activities, but then Maya, you know, tricks them with pious activities. Because pious activities will also keep you out of the spiritual realm. That's why Krishna says those who are not worried about pious and impious activities, they just worry about devotional service. You know? See, we're not worried about doing something good because it's good. We're worried about doing something good because then that's the best thing for Krishna's interest. You understand? Because that point is, yeah. So many times we see, you know, having money, having a good place, having all the facilities that are talked about here is good, because we equate that with a pious life. Right? To us, suffering means impiety. But we also see piety brings suffering also. Because you have the wealth, now you're worried about it. Someone will come and steal it, this and that. Shastras say the man who has nothing, he sleeps peacefully. He doesn't have to worry. But the man who has so much, he has to worry very much. The man with nothing is free. He moves around the street, goes here and there. The very wealthy, powerful men, they have bodyguards, they have so many cameras, they have so much security. They cannot move as they please. So the piety also brings difficulties. But because we're conditioned like this, you know, we watch the television, we read the magazines, so we think, yes, that fancy car is good. You know, the nice house is good. We bring with us, we keep maintain those values that we gained from our parents, and we don't give them up. And then we find ourselves living the same culture, just we've removed the sinful side of it. Right? You take Western culture, remove the sinful side, and then it's considered okay. The result of impious activities is one goes to the animal kingdom and the hellish planets. The reaction to pious activities is we go to the heavenly planets. So if that's what we want, then that's fine. But if it's not what we want, then we have to also not worry about this and just serve Krishna.
Or isn't one of the missions of Prabhupada trying to show the world through simple living eye thinking how to be pious then?
Yes, but that's in relationship to Krishna. Just like Prabhupada pointed out, it's no big deal if people are vegetarian. The donkeys are vegetarian also. But offering something to Krishna, because being vegetarian is pious, but still, I mean, there's tons of species of living entities who are vegetarian. So that's no big deal. You know, it's no great deal that you're a vegetarian in next life and you're a nightingale or something and you swing very sweetly because you're a vegetarian. You know what I'm saying? So the point is this pious lifestyle is useful because it's in connection with Krishna consciousness. It means the pious activities of the Vedic culture are considered pious because they're closer to the standard of the culture of the spiritual realm. But piety on its own, just to be pious, is useless. Right? You understand? Like you're on a merry-go-round. So then the people that are going holds up the road that their car runs on. You know, what piety are we doing for the sun? Or for all the knowledge that we're getting, even if we want to be materialistic. What about all that knowledge we're getting? People have been working for hundreds of thousands of years to get some of these knowledge that they have now. What piety we're doing for that. So even though one may consider that one's very pious, one has a long way to go. You know? Only in the Vedic culture can you actually follow the path of piety that you actually pay back. You pay the tax for everything that you're getting. The modern culture has no facility. So even though you look pious, you're still going to hell. You know? I mean, a wombat is a really nice, nice living entity. It doesn't bother you much. It's sweet, it's cuddly, cute, you know? Like that. It's not that impiety simply means nasty and just, you know, very demoniac. You know, that's why you have, you know, very nice, pleasant animals. You know, because they were, you know, something pious. You know, cow is top of the line in the animal kingdom. But still, it's a cow. The living entity there is in ignorance. Because of sinful activities, by improper behavior, they become a cow. So being nice is not good enough. It may be a start for someone who doesn't know better. Just like Prabhupada mentioned, all these kind of subtle kind of activities, you know, like what you call now New Age. Then if one has not come in contact with Krishna consciousness, it may be useful for the person that elevates them out of the grossness into more subtle understandings. But unless they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, it takes them actually to the actual platform of spirituality. Then it's useless. But for a devotee to go from spirituality down to that, which is just the mental platform, it's no glory. It's nothing special. So one has to be able to understand. Those gopis that couldn't go to Krishna on that night when he blew the flute, they were held back by their pious activities. That's why they couldn't go. So in that meditation of thinking of Krishna, those pious activities were burned up. Then they went. But until those are burned, they were not qualified to go. Piety is no qualification to get in the spiritual world. Piety can be useful if one comes in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. But it doesn't have to be. Dasaratnakar was not in any way pious. You know Dasaratnakar? He was a big highway dacoit. Anyone had come, he'd come out and kill them and steal all their riches and all that. So Narad Muni was one day coming. And then this dacoit jumps out, you know, and wants to steal something. He says, I don't mind giving you whatever I got, but why you're doing all these things? He thought, well, I'm doing these because you need money, you know, it's the real world. You gotta maintain yourself, you know. Maybe you're a you know, a mendicant, a sannyasi, you don't understand these things. But we grihasthas, you know, we know what's actually going on here, you know. So, you know, I got to take care of the family. So then you ask, okay, but you don't know that this kind of way of doing things is impious. And he said, of course, but, you know, then, but what? Who's going to suffer these reactions? You know, he said, well, it's, you know, myself, the family. He says, so Narad said, you go ask them if they're willing to share in the reactions to his sinful activities of stealing. Say he was very confident. So he says, I'll wait here. I'm a sadhu. You can trust me. I won't go anywhere. You go and you come back. If they say that they're willing to take part and all that, okay, then we can continue our discussion. So he went back to the house and he asked the family. He asked his wife, asked his children, so are you willing to suffer for the reactions for his stealing? And they said, what? No, you're doing the stealing. Why we should suffer? You know, that's your problem, you know. You're supposed to take care of us. How you do it, that's your problem. It's nothing to do with us. So then he was shocked because he was thinking that there's so much of bond of affection and this and that. And he saw the bond of affection is just he's bringing in the goods, so then they're happy, you know. So then he went back and told this to Narad Muni. So he said, what to do? How can I relieve myself? So he said, you have to chant the Lord's name. So then he couldn't chant. He told him to chant the name Ram. He couldn't chant it because he was so sinful, he just couldn't chant. Oh no, excuse me, this one's Magrari. I'm mixing with Magrari. So he realized there that this is the proper thing. That this whole material life was useless. He's working so hard. What he thought was reality, what he thought were, you know, substantial substance in the relationship between himself and his family and all that, he's working hard because of the deep bonds that are there. But actually, they have affection for him because he's bringing in the goods. If he's not bringing in the goods, the affection is not necessarily there. So then, realizing this, then he took up devotional service. And then later on, he became known as Valmiki Muni and wrote the Ramayana. No, that was Valmiki. Magrari, he just became a nice devotee. Magrari was the one with he couldn't chant Ram, though. So that was Dasaratnakar. So even if one's impious, if one comes in contact with the devotees, then one becomes qualified. So piety isn't necessarily, it can be helpful, because then one doesn't have as many sinful desires. But then one may have pious desires, which can also be, you know. Piety results generally in position, wealth, influence, beauty, knowledge, you know, good birth. And then all these are very easy to get proud of. Right? Indu is so proud of his position that he insulted his guru, Brihaspati. And then because of that, then he lost everything. He lost the whole kingdom, and Bali Maharaj and his demons came and took over. Because he was proud of these things. So piety can be just as much an impediment to devotional service as impiety. Because one crew creates the mode of passion, the other one creates the mode of ignorance.
In 422-24 in Bhagavatam, Prabhupada describes them in the third book that our main mission is to stop the violence within the world. So you can look at it and say, oh, that's a pious activity, and you can be callous and just say, I'll let the violence run and I'll just go on my transcendental way. Or you can actually show empathy and want to actually try and stop the violence in the world.
So what, you're going to get yourself an AK-47 and go out there to Bosnia and show them, you know, where it's at? So, but you have to understand, what is violence? Violence means where the soul is not Krishna conscious. Any activity that is not done for Krishna is violence. So that's real violence. So then stopping violence means giving people Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean going out there and, you know, doing marches and shouting about war and nuclear things and this and that. That's not stopping violence. Because the violence of the soul is what we're talking about. Because all that is happening because people aren't Krishna conscious. As soon as they're Krishna conscious, then they give up this kind of violence.
So we should just worry about trying to tell people to stop killing cows? Or?
We should worry about them becoming Krishna conscious. Because even if they don't kill the cows, unless they give up the material desire, then it'll come again. It's on the cycle. When you have 8,400,000 species, then to take the body of a cow, you know, unless it's a progression from something else, then one of the ways is by killing them. Right?
Part of our mission is to actually to enhance those qualities of piety, stop people from killing the cow.
No, but it's by showing an alternative lifestyle in which one can be God conscious and work with nature instead of against nature. Result may be the same, it may look the same, but we have to give up that attachment to just being nice. See, it's just like you have a rule and regulation, right? So now you can either do it because it's a rule and regulation, and you can get on everybody's case because they're not following the rule. Or we can see that following this rule pleases Krishna, so we want to please Krishna. So our purpose is pleasing Krishna, not to follow the rule. We want to please Krishna. Then naturally, following that rule becomes part of it. So we want to please Krishna. We want to offer things to Krishna. We want to live a lifestyle that pleases Krishna. So then that means a simple lifestyle with the cows, the land, like this, and we take whatever we have and offer to Krishna. Our purpose is not to just become, you know, simple farmers or something. What do you call them? I call them cockies. Yeah, I mean, that's not our purpose. You know, just become some bloke out there with his four-wheel drive out in the country there. You know, that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to please Krishna. So if we use some of the same methods, it's because it's Krishna's material energy. It's not that devotees mystically work with something else. No, they use Krishna's energy in his service. Maya always belongs to Krishna. But we use it properly while the others don't. Even you're vegetarian, you're eating an eggplant, but whose eggplant is it? So even though we think we're very pious, I am only eating vegetables, but we're stealing those vegetables because they don't belong to us. We may say, no, I paid money, but who's the money belong to? That's Shri, that's Lakshmi, it belongs to Krishna. So that means we're a vegetarian Ravana. You understand? It means unless it's offered to Krishna, you're still a thief and a rascal. Because it all belongs to Krishna. You say, no, this is my land. This land's going to be here when you go. So land's not ours. Nothing is ours. But we're given a quota. And then if we take that quota and offer that back to Krishna, he becomes pleased. But if we just take our quota and, okay, we're nice enough to stick to our quota, but still we're thieves. So we're small thieves instead of big thieves.
I was just going, because as a preaching movement, we can't just sort of say, you know, give everything to Krishna and just black and white. We have to actually go in a roundabout fashion. Otherwise, if that was the case, then why bother with food for life? Why bother?
Because food for life, people are taking prasadam. That's why we do food for life. We're not doing food for life simply for the PR that we're doing pious activities. That comes as a side benefit. We're doing it because we want to distribute prasadam.
So what comes out? The eating of the prasadam? Or the people praising, becoming favorable to Krishna consciousness? So
just because they praise doesn't mean they necessarily become so favorable. Doesn't mean they're going to start chanting or anything. That is a side benefit. The main benefit is people are taking prasadam, because that's direct service. Then people appreciate it, then they also get benefit for that. They'll be given opportunity for more service. Because we have to understand, those people that take prasadam, that is, they may not know it's prasadam, this, that, so they're in material consciousness. The results they get from taking prasadam will be great. If they're thinking in terms of material activities, results they'll get would be great. One such bum in the street had nothing, starving to death, druggy, who was just wandering around the streets in Sydney, and for a few weeks was eating at the Food for Life there. Otherwise they would have died. They would have starved to death. You know? Now they're one of the biggest, most well-known musicians in the world. Michael Jackson. He mentioned that to the devotees. He said, I was just a bum in the street. He would have starved if it wasn't for Food for Life. But because he's not so interested in devotional service, you just take a little bit of prasadam and turn that into material credits. You know? Just like if you take $1 and then you trade it in for the Belgian Congo money, you'd probably get, you know, crores of, you get, you know, tons of money. So devotional service is said that taking prasadam, it's not proper. It's a kind of, you know, improper to give and make a comparison, because you can't, because it's unlimited. But it's said it's like equal to 10,000 Ashwamedha yagyas. It only takes 100 Ashwamedha yagyas to become Indra. So you can understand what transcendental piety they're getting. So that's what we're looking for. We're distributing prasadam. Then in that, then, if people also then appreciate that, and because they appreciate that, then we're seen more in a good light, then we do that. Right? So just like, let's say if we go out in Sankirtan, then if we dress nicely, it'll be better appreciated. But our purpose is not to dress nicely, to show people, yeah, Hare Krishnas can also dress really, really neat. You know? No, our purpose is to preach. Then in doing that, if we also dress properly so people can relate to that and adjust with it, you know, it's more easy for them, then we do that. But that's not our purpose, to just dress nicely. Is that understood? So therefore it's said we deal with the material world only as much as necessary, not more. We only have to dress this much, we dress that much. Not that we have to go downtown and spend hundreds of dollars to buy something fashionable. We dress what's nice, pleasant. respectable, and life goes on.